You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to TPC as we continue to do that thing that we do here on the AM Talk Radio airwaves every Saturday night, and this Saturday is no different. I'm James Edwards, flanked by Keith Alexander here this Saturday evening, August the 6th. And let me tell you what's coming up tonight, if I can, and if I can clear my throat, and if I can hear in real time, bring up my notes. Now, this is a That's a true trifecta. Okay, so we're going to be offering commentary on news and current events this, our first hour. In the next hour, you'll never believe where I was last weekend, ladies and gentlemen, none other than Selma, Alabama. I gave a talk, we did a book signing, and I'm going to share with you my takeaways on my personal visit to Selma. And then Keith is going to intertwine that with his historical knowledge of the unrest in Selma back from the 60s, and we'll tie it all together, blend it together in a way that I think will be enjoyable to you. So news and
James was channeling the ghost of John Lewis while he was there.
Boy, I'll tell you, I was right there. I was right there on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. That's coming up in the second hour, so stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. That's coming up. News and current events in the first hour, and then in the third hour, a young lady making her debut appearance on TPC, Little Apostate. If you haven't heard about her, you're going to get an hour introduction tonight, and I'm really looking forward to presenting her to you. You can follow her on Twitter, at Little Apostate, and just go to YouTube to check out her YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube.com, and in the search field, type in Little Apostate, and I think you'll like what you see. So she's coming up later, and our only guest tonight, our featured and only guest, is the Little Apostate. So, Keith, I think we need to begin the program by starting with the Alex Jones civil suit. This is a headline. The verdict is in. Alex Jones owes $45.2 million in punitive damages to the Sandy Hook victims. Now, that's just two of them. It was only two plaintiffs, only two. $45.2 million in punitive damages. That's on top of the $4.1 million in compensatory damages. If you're doing the math at home, that's $49.3 million to two, just two Sandy Hook families. There are two more trials after this, and perhaps criminal proceedings as well. They're saying he might have perjured himself. And in order to get these punitive damages in the state of Texas, it had to be a unanimous verdict. That is surprisingly bad news.
Well, you got to look at the venue of this case. It was Austin. That's kind of Texas's answer to Charlottesville in Virginia. It's a little ivy-covered North Korea that they have there going for them there in Austin. And quite frankly, you would have thought that Alex Jones would have had enough sense not to locate himself in the most liberal part of the state of Texas. But he did. And because he was there, they had venue, and they sued him. And he got the most left-wing jury that I imagine you could get
in the state of Texas.
In the state of Texas, right. Just be like, you know, what happened to some people that we know that were sued in Charlottesville. Being sued in Charlottesville
Very similar.
It's not like being sued over in Prince Edward County or something like that, where they had the they shut down the public schools rather than integrate them back in the mid-50s. This is something that we've always got to look. I worry, for example, about Jared Taylor being located where he is in Northern Virginia. If he gets sued, he's going to be in a very liberal venue. And as a lawyer, I'm, you know, aware of all of this, and I know about forum shopping. I know what the left does. They've been doing it since right after World War II. They would always shop to get a liberal venue and a liberal judge. They do it to this day. They almost all these liberal cases that you've had in the past, they started out in the Ninth Circuit, which is the most liberal circuit in the American judiciary, in the federal judiciary. And then they would get a, for example, like on the homosexual marriage, they shopped it to a gay judge in San Francisco. He found in their favor. Then it was appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most liberal circuit out of all of the circuits in the federal circuit court system. And, of course, they confirmed it. So it goes up to the Supreme Court with a presumption of correctness because of those two decisions. That's what you have to watch about. That's apparently a nuance that escaped Alex Jones. He should have. There's so many great conservative venues there. I just can't believe that he allowed himself to be targeted, you know, to be trapped in the most liberal part of Texas.
Well, the good news, I guess, if there is any good news, is that it's like in Charlottesville, and we'll talk about some of the parallels this hour, but in Charlottesville, I think it was like a $250 billion judgment, but state statutes caps those punitive damages, and so Alex Jones, they're capped in Texas, too. So it's capped at $750,000 per plaintiff. There were two plaintiffs, 750 times two. That's $1.5 million in punitives. That's all he's going to be liable to pay.
That's what the left wanted. They wanted the shock value of those astronomical figures.
Well, he's got some more coming. He's got some more civil suits.
Also, there's something called remittiture that they have in almost all civil courts where the judge can step in and say, well, I agree with the jury's verdict, but they went too far as damages, and we're going to remit the damages down to this other level. So he's not without defenses at this point, but I just hate the fact that he, you know, led with his chin on this thing by being in Austin.
Well, I mean, he decided to live there for whatever reason. I don't think he could have anticipated years ago when he decided to buy a home in Austin that this day would come. But so again, folks, if you're unaware of this, and you shouldn't be, if you listen to our Charlottesville coverage where we covered that trial for a month, and we actually had participants who were testifying on the stand come on for our programming, even in some cases the week they were on the stand. But punitive damages, of course, are a form of punishment for a defendant's behavior. CNN writes that Jones repeatedly lied about the Sandy Hook massacre. He stoked conspiracy theories about families and about the families there, prompting defamation lawsuits. Now, to that, I would say, so?
A difference of opinion is not lying.
If he's saying it was a hoax, and in his opinion it was a hoax, how is that not constitutionally protected free speech? Whether he's right, whether he's wrong, here's the point, Keith. As in Charlottesville, you had Charlottesville last fall, now you've got Alex Jones this summer. That's two very big cases within, 8 months apart. The civil courts are being used as a weapon to punish dissidents and suppress free speech. That's the story here.
Well, they money whip you in civil court, and they jail whip you in criminal court, and they'll use the court system like they always have because it's the least democratic branch of the government, the one where the people making the decisions have the most insulation and protection from adverse consequences such as re-election, for example.
We're going to do another segment on the Alex Jones verdict, then we're going to get into some good news, and then in the next hour I'm going to tell you about my trip to Selma, and then closing the program tonight, Little Apostate. Stay tuned.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Thank you. Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Okay, so we're talking about the Alex Jones verdict right out of the gate tonight, and then we've got some more news occurrence events this hour coming up. But Mark Bankston, the lawyer for the parents in this case, revealed that Jones's lawyer accidentally sent 2 years of text messages that appeared to directly contradict his sworn testimony. Now, this wasn't something that was ordered to be given through discovery or anything like that. It was just some sort of a colossal mistake that this happened. And the inconsistency, so says CNN, in the testimony could serve to undermine Jones's credibility in future civil cases, and that legal experts say he exposed himself to a perjury charge that could carry up to 10 years in prison in Texas. I don't think that will happen, but it was a big mess. But I got to ask you this, Keith, again, he said this was a hoax, Sandy Hook. I don't see how that qualifies as defamation. I think that's a constitutionally a protected freedom of speech. It's political speech. And I wonder, when will the media have to pay for their lies and disinformation? And of course, the answer to that is, under this current system, never. Jones is entitled to his opinion. If he wants to believe that it was a hoax, that's his right, right? That's what freedom of speech was supposed to be all about. And I think that this is arguably worse than the Charlottesville verdict, because all Jones ever did was talk.
Well, remember, Jones is an outlier. He's really not part of the right as we understand it and know it. He basically will not touch third rails. He has a specialty in conspiracy theories, things like this. But on the other hand, something like the Sandy Hook.
Was that a Freudian slip?
Yeah, there's a Freudian slip, yeah. The Sandy Hook incident has so many layers of facts in it that, you know, you could make a case for something like that being a hoax or being the truth, but there are all sorts of lies, over-exaggerations, understatements, things like this, woven into the fabric of the media narrative about things like that, that I think it would be very, very difficult to come in and say that this is just an outright lie. It's not like Joe Blow is the father of Jennifer, okay? Well, we have DNA evidence for that. It's either the truth or it's not the truth, and you have scientific evidence. You don't have anything like this there in the Sandy Hook incident or in a lot of other incidents that happen, and there are plenty of, for example, are they going to use this as a precedent when people say that there was rigging of the election in 2020?
Well, if this is a precedent now, they can go anywhere with it. And we'll talk about another precedent-setting case that might be familiar to our audience in a moment. Yeah, I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But let me say this. I'm going to mention a name that hasn't been mentioned on this program in a couple of years, but he nailed it in this instance, and that's Richard Spencer. Now, I don't know what happened to Richard over the course of the last couple of years. He has taken a turn, and he's in a different place now. But you understand, I knew Richard years before he became Richard, years before 2016 when he really burst.
Richard didn't even know Richard when he
Well, listen, I met Richard in the late 2000s, and we were fast friends. And he wrote actually an endorsement of my book, which is in the book, along with Virginia Abernathy and Paul Gottfried. And Richard and I got along really well. We always got along well. And I don't know what's happened the last couple of years that have caused him to take a turn. You know, the SPLC actually wrote an article, the Southern Poverty Law Center wrote an article last fall that said, I invented Richard Spencer. You can read all about it. I don't know what that was about, but if I did, something changed.
The mad scientist at work again.
Of course, that's not a joke. They did write that, but, you know.
It should be a joke.
We knew each other. We worked together, and then he did his own thing. And now he's in a totally different place entirely. But nevertheless, he did write this about the Alex Jones verdict, and he is spot on. He wrote this: a plausible, if not necessarily winning, defense could have been attempted based on the Snyder versus Phelps decision, in which the Supreme Court upheld the Westboro Baptist Church's right to demean the memory of the fallen soldiers at their own funerals, provided it was political speech. Jones could have plausibly said that he was not engaged in the harassment of individuals. He was engaged in political speech against the globalists or some such. He got the facts wrong, but not maliciously so. This defamatory, but my complaint was, I want to get in. So Richard's right there. Richard's right there. That's how he could have gone, and that could have been a winning argument. And there is a difference. Attorney, counselor, tell us the difference between a defamatory statement and a libelous statement. A defamatory statement is spoken. A libelous statement is written. Is that pretty much
it? That's the difference between libel and slander. Both of them fall under the category of defamation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's why I asked the attorney here on the staff.
But see, what's happening with this situation is that you've got so many layers of facts. For example, let's go to the election. Was the election fraudulent? Was it rigged? Well, in some precincts, it was. There's pretty definite proof of that. In other districts, the proof may not be so conclusive. So see, that's, you know, what's happened with Alex Jones. Alex Jones has a tendency to get off on a limb all by himself. I don't know anyone else that made such a big deal out of Sandy Hook as he did, but he did. And that's his right as a U.S. citizen, and if he thinks that the government and the media sometimes overplay things, sometimes make something out of nothing, he's absolutely right. Look, I lived through the Civil Rights Movement. I saw all of that type of stuff taking place during the Civil Rights Movement. I saw people and the media conspiring with one side to make the scene look a certain way so they could sell it to the people of America and the world. So, you know, who knows what the deal is, but you can't parse things too fine. He wasn't doing this out of malice towards the parents or the children. He was doing it because he had, like James said, bigger fish to fry with, you know, the government and with law enforcement.
It doesn't matter if you're dead wrong or if he was right or whatever. I don't even think we ever covered that here on this particular program. It's different strokes for different folks, but I just... That he could be found liable for $50 million in damages. Now, we mentioned the state statutes are going to pare that down, but if he's got more lawsuits coming up now that the door is open and the camel's nose is in the tin, as you like to say, Keith, this could keep going and going and going. And what are the statutes of limitations for defamation wear out? I mean, this Sandy Hook was a long time ago. But I Sam Bushman.
Well, every time you make a statement, I guess that starts a new tour.
He hasn't been talking about it recently. There's no reason to. Yeah. Sam Bushman, who hosts the Liberty Roundtable program Monday through Friday on this network, has been covering this case the last couple of days. I was his guest back on Wednesday, and he was talking about my libel case. Now, in my libel case...
That was as cut and dry as anything ever should have been.
Ladies and gentlemen, I got to ask your forgiveness for me bringing this up again, but it is germane. And Sam was comparing my libel case to this case with Alex Jones. Now, in my libel case, a major daily newspaper in the United States, the Detroit News of Detroit, Michigan, their daily newspaper, said I was the leader of the Ku Klux Klan because of my association with Donald Trump, and they were trying to hurt Trump, and they took the exaggeration.
And you invented Richard Spencer, too. Okay.
Well, that was the SPLC. But... So the textbook definition in the Restatement of Torts is, as you know, to allege that somebody is a member of the Ku Klux Klan. They didn't allege I was a member. They said I was its actual leader. So we thought that was certainly met the standards of libel, because that is the textbook definition of libel.
And then, of course, the Restatement on Torts.
Well, and that is supposed to inform the decisions of officers of the court. So we took it to court and we got thoroughly routed and embarrassingly so. I mean, the decision was so comical. We're not going to go by case precedent. We're not going to go by the restatement of torts. We're going to go by Aesop's fables. Aesop's fables.
But man, you know, there's,
I don't want to dwell on that too much, but I lost a slam dunk case because the law is whatever any given judge, any given jury says it is. So if the textbook definition of libel doesn't meet libel, how in the hell does Alex Jones expressing his First Amendment right end up being a $50 million verdict against him? It just doesn't even begin to make sense unless you understand that the courts and the system are absolutely rigged against dissidents. You will find there is no law for our people in the system's courts.
Well,
then it makes sense.
Look,
then it is consistent.
There's long precedent for this, okay? That's what the Brown versus Board of Education decision was. Normally, appellate cases are decided by stare decisis, case precedent on a similar factual situation which has the same principles involved, or if it's a statute or a constitutional provision, legislative history. Well, the legislative history was against the NAACP in the Brown case. So was stare decisis. Stare decisis was Plessy versus Ferguson, which said that public facilities can be separate but equal and not violate the 14th Amendment. And the legislative history was that the same Congress that created the 14th Amendment also created a segregated school system for D.C. But they ignored all that and based it on a decision, on a experiment run by a half-baked black sociologist.
They do whatever they want to do. There is no law.
And that was back in 1952 and 3.
I want to get off of this, but if they can sue Jones, they can sue anybody.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Tony Marusa reporting. By an overwhelming 86-11 vote, the Senate Tuesday night gave final passage to a bill that ramps up health care and disability benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxins. The PACT Act of 2022 passed Tuesday night. Pat Toomey, who led the Republicans installing the measure, warned that it included what he calls a trick that would permit indiscriminate spending. And a school in Utah has removed books from the shelves.
Utah's largest public school district is defending its decision to remove 52 books that some parents view as pornographic. The Alpine School District has roughly 84,000 students. The district decided to pull the books by 41 authors from its library shelves after an internal audit flagged them as sensitive material without literary merit. From the West Coast, USA Radio News Bureau, I'm Lance Pry.
I'm Tony Marusa for USA Radio News.
Mike Lindell and MyPillow offering the BOGO extravaganza right now on a whole slew of MyPillow products. Now you can find all sorts of great deals on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillow, six-piece towel sets, roll-and-go anywhere pillows, much more, all priced buy one, get one free. Go to MyPillow.com/USA, use promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175 and find you some great MyPillow products. They're all available. Oh, by the way, you can also get Mike's book absolutely free with any purchase, but you have to go to MyPillow.com/USA or call 1-800-951-8175. 8175 and make sure you use the promo code, the buy one, get one extravaganza, going on right now at MyPillow.com.
A kidnapped girl's escape in Alabama has led to the discovery of two decomposing bodies and the arrest of a man now facing murder and kidnapping charges. Police got a call Monday morning from a driver about a 12-year-old girl walking alone along County Road 34 in Dadeville, Tallapoosa County. Sheriff Jimmy Abbott said Tuesday at a news conference the girl had been restrained to bedposts for about a week, according to the criminal complaint. Jose Paulino Pascal Reyes, 37, was arrested Monday about 25 miles away in Auburn on suspicion of first-degree kidnapping by U.S. Marshals and police, the sheriff said, adding other agencies are also on this case. U.S. job openings fell by the most in just over 2 years in June as demand for workers eased in the retail and wholesale trade industries, But overall, the labor market remains tight, allowing the Federal Reserve to continue raising interest rates. At least 4.2 million workers voluntarily quit their jobs in June and layoffs declined. This is USA Radio News.
We're going to get off the bad news and get back on the good news train. You know, our terminus for the last year and change has been Good News Harbor, and it has really picked up this year with all of the trends and all of the projections and all of the polls, and we've been talking about that a lot. Really good show last week, I thought, Keith, with Brad Griffin, Jared Taylor. Of course, you were in the middle to tie it all together and offer your take on what all of this hullabaloo regarding Christian nationalism is about, but the Senate Republicans blocked that homosexual marriage vote here recently and within the last couple of days. And to that I say, good. If you are
and the left is going berserk about it.
Good. Because if you are a member of the support group, if you are a member of a support group of the regime, then you're my enemy, and I will not find common ground with you. I did read a good article. It was pretty insightful. It was that the Supreme Court wasn't going to take the action that they took this summer with regards to abortion if they didn't think that the Senate was going to hold firm and stand the ground on these social and cultural issues. But we mentioned Pennsylvania gubernatorial nominee, GOP gubernatorial nominee in Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano, last week. He was asked if so-called LGBTQ IA plus, whatever they're calling themselves these days, should be allowed to marry. He said, quote, absolutely not, end quote. So you didn't have Republicans that strong and that stout-hearted even a couple of years ago. I mean, other than Trump, this is a new phenomenon with DeSantis talking about the anti-white attack in Michigan and using the word, Wisconsin, and using the word anti-white. We've gone through a litany of examples of people that are beginning to, Marjorie Taylor Greene has had several. So things are changing. But what we really got excited about last week, of course, was the Viktor Orban address in Hungary, where he said Hungarians do not want to be race mixed. We will interbreed with other Europeans, and we want to maintain our purity within that regard. Now, here was Viktor Orban this week. Once again, the left apoplectic over the fact that Viktor Orban spoke at CPAC in Dallas. In fact, the entire event kicked off with an appearance from him. I have not yet seen what he said, but I hope his remarks that he made the same remarks again, because we need Brad Griffin, who was on the show last week. We just mentioned him over at Occidental Descent. We need someone to break the, we need a world leader. I mean, we've been breaking the ice on that for 20 years, but we need a world leader to break the ice on that taboo, because I've got a poll right here that shows a quarter of Republican men and white evangelicals oppose codifying interracial marriage into federal law. And the true number of those opposed to it is doubtlessly higher. But if you have leaders like Orban who are going to speak out and give people the safe cover to express their real feelings on issues, then all of this can go mainstream, just like the opposition to the Great Replacement has gone mainstream, with now 75% of the 60 million Trump voters saying they know. And by the way, it's not a theory. It's the Great Replacement fact. They know that we are being traded out for a non-white population here.
Well, quite frankly, the left has every reason to be apoplectic about Viktor Orban speaking at CPAC. I remember when people like Ben Shapiro were considered too strong a medicine for CPAC to have. And now you've got somebody that really will call a spade a dirty shovel, as my wife's maternal grandfather used to say back in the day. Somebody that will come out and speak out about race mixing, speak out about homosexual marriage, speak out about all sorts of other topics that were supposed to be settled and moveon.org. We can't talk about these things anymore. The left has always considered their victories to be untouchable and never can be changed. On the other hand, they never accept any decision that goes adverse to their agenda as being settled. They keep trying and trying and trying, like they did with the hate crimes law that came before Congress 43 times and got passed on the 44th try. See, this is showing, like I've said before, that there's a reverse on this buggy. We can now put things into reverse. They have made it a matter of their faith that nothing can ever be changed. Once you get a progressive change made according to their progressive agenda. It can never be rolled back, and now things are being rolled back, and you're getting people like Viktor Orban that can say that CPAC now is reconsidering its position on, for example, if race mixing is taboo, well, so would interracial marriage be.
I don't think Clarence Thomas is going to negate his own marriage. However, it...
The fact that CPAC could even entertain somebody that would speak like this, can you imagine what would have happened?
Well, they were
10
running
years
all
ago?
Of us out a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. You couldn't even show up there. You couldn't have a booth out there.
You know, our correspondent, Scoop Stanton, was getting media credentials there for years, and then they put the stop to that, and now you got Viktor Orban. But the whole thing.
The times they are changing,
the whole
as
thing,
Bob Dylan said.
Race mixing. I mean, that's a loaded term. The left, of course, and the media and the purveyors of the narrative would say, look at how stupid these people are just because a person's skin color is different. Why? Well, of course,
we're not talking about differences in the hue of your suntan.
That's
okay?
Right. The difference in skin color is the most superficial
difference.
That's right. I mean, it all goes, sub-Saharan Africans have never built a prosperous civilization because their skin is darker. That is not the reason. Racial differences go to the very marrow of your bone. This is genetic. This is something far, far, far deeper than pigmentation. And I wish every race of humanity peace and prosperity and the ability to live free and be who they are. But I also know this. I know that when you have different groups with competing interests occupying the same living space, that you will always have conflict. God bless them all, but their heroes will not be my heroes and are not my heroes. Their culture is not my culture. Their folkways are not my folkways. Their language, their faith, everything that makes a civilization unique, we don't share it. We're all bound together here in America through vapid consumerism. And things like that, that's not a civilization. So while I wish no ill will to anyone, I do want to live apart. I want to live amongst people who share.
I want to live in a nation. A biblical nation, as the Bible defines it, is a people who have shared customs and folkways, things like that. For example, Europe became the home of Christianity. It was the alternative name for Europe in most of the two millenniums since the death of Christ has been Christendom. Let's say that Christendom had been located in Africa rather than in Europe. Do you think the Africans would have built Notre Dame Cathedral? I doubt it. Do you think they'd have written all of those wonderful hymns by people like Bach and Mozart and likewise? I doubt it.
Well, that's the thing. That's a good point, too. I want them to be proud of whatever their culture and cultural accomplishments and racial accomplishments are. But by God, I'm going to be proud of what ours are, and I'm going to be proud of my ancestors, and I'm never going to apologize for who my ancestors are and who my culture, what my culture is and what my race is, because a race is a nation. A nation is a race. A nation is a people. A country is a totally different thing.
How do we know the Bible tells us so?
Well, okay, that's one reason. But so that's that. That's that, and that's why we need to be, we're better off separate, and I will always adhere to that. I don't want the monuments of my ancestors being torn down as they are tearing them down.
And, of course, if we tore down Martin Luther King's statue in Washington, D.C., I'm sure they would just take that in stride and say, well, that's just their right. You know, they've got a right to let off some steam. That's what the white establishment in America has said to people like us when we object to the taking down of statues of Robert E. Lee, Nathan Bedford Forrest, and other cultural heroes of white people, particularly white Southerners.
So that's that. And I must say, too, though, they have chosen the rules of engagement. So if ever our people gain institutional power again, I think that those rules should be revisited. We should not be the Mr. Nice Guy anymore. We have to defend and safeguard our patrimony, our inheritance, cultural, racially, whatever, spiritually. We have to safeguard our civilization.
That's right. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, as I used to say.
Well, one more thing I got to tell you before this break. Blake Masters. We talked about Blake Masters. These are the people that are winning now. We talked about Michael Perutka last week and the week before.
Plenty of good stuff there, but let me say a cautionary tone. these people don't know about and are not factoring in electoral fraud. I think there was fraud in the 2020 presidential election. There may have been electoral fraud in the most recent election we had last Thursday, this past Thursday in Memphis. And there will almost certainly be attempts at electoral fraud made in November. So the Republicans that are depending on a red tidal wave and talking confidently about it are basically whistling past a graveyard. If they do not step in and take real world action to prevent electoral fraud, it will happen. It will be done, as always, by the left against the right. That's the reason we had a Voting Rights Act of 1965, and Selma was the lead-up demonstration to getting that passed. And we're going to talk about Selma after these words from our sponsors.
Well, not quite yet. Not quite yet. That's coming up in the second hour. But after these words from our sponsors, yeah, right. You were right on that. We will wrap up.
After it covers a lot of stuff.
It doesn't necessarily mean immediately after. Well, we got a little bit more news for you in terms of current events and headlines this week. Then Selma, and then the little apostate. Debut guest tonight.
Hello, TPC family. It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Our live broadcast rolls on this hot August night. I'm James Edwards. I'm still James Edwards. Keith's still with me, too, although he's in the green room right now. He knows he needs to be back before a segment starts, so he'll walk in a second. But I was going to say this about Blake Masters. So Blake Masters was the Republican senatorial candidate in Arizona, and he won his primary this week as well. And we mentioned Blake Masters a few weeks ago by the fact that he addressed gun violence as being predominantly a black problem and without apology, which you love to see. We love that. Courage is contagious and so is cowardice. So let's go with the courageous. Let's take the courageous avenue there. Now, I don't have much to complain about Blake Masters. I don't. It's like a lot of people we say, he's not our guy, but he's not our guy. He would be a vast improvement over John McCain and Jeff Flake. You're talking about Republican senators from Arizona. We'll take Blake Masters over these guys for sure. And you had John McCain, of course, and Flake, who normally represent Arizona and push for amnesty. So I think Masters would probably vote like Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is right, the right way to vote most of the time. So that's more good news, Keith, that these things are going on and Michael Perutka. And I think in the case of Masters, though, of course, he has a very real chance of winning because the Republican Senate nominee normally does win, or at least historically has won there, going back to Flake and what a flake he was.
Well, it's awfully good news. Like you said, things are changing, but don't let your guard down because
no.
The left has found that they can cheat in elections and get away with it until the Supreme Court grows a pair of nads and decides that they will take on these cases, even though they are charged and politically electric and something that they would rather not involve themselves in. People run from controversy, but controversy is part of the job. They didn't run from controversy in Brown versus Board of Education. Why would they run from controversy in a case of clear electoral fraud? And it's being proven more all the time. You know, Mike Lindell, say what you want to, he has done a wonderful job of unearthing a lot of this fraud, and so have other people that have been working with him. This is something that we cannot allow to be swept under the rug. We've got to bring it out, and we've got to take real world safeguards to prevent it from happening again in 2022 and in 2024.
I keep forgetting to look at my notes. I got to remember to look at my notes. One of the articles written about Blake Masters' win was he promotes the great replacement theory, and this is supposed to be some reason why it was so terrible that he won. Well, again, we gotta. Anytime we see this, we gotta respond by saying it's not a theory; it's a fact. And how do we know it's a fact, Keith?
Because of just look at the election. I mean, look at the demographic
from 1960.
Population. 1960, America was 90% white, 10% other. Now it's 57% white and 43% other. So let me tell you, if that's not the great replacement, what is? And the left keeps talking about it dismissively as if it's some type of conspiracy theory. But it's moved way beyond that in the eyes and the minds of most American citizens. They know what's happening. They see what's happening. And we know why the left has been promoting this. They want power, and they think they'll get power by having third worlders voting Democrat. But guess what? The way things are shaking out on this, that's not such a completely in-the-bag situation for them. A lot of Hispanics are now realizing, particularly with sexual deviancy being the new civil rights, blacks aren't going for that, neither are Hispanics.
I was texting with Peter Brimelow, longtime friend Peter Brimelow of VDare.com, former editor of Forbes magazine. Everybody knows Peter Brimelow, Alien Nation, regular guest on this program. We're going to get Peter back on. He's already been on a couple of times this year. I was actually texting with Peter to see if he would appear tonight. He had a conflict. We'll get him on again soon. But he and I were texting, and we were really just going through this recap of things that had happened, things that we've already covered on this program at least once, and in some cases more than once, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But one more thing that came out this week in the news, with the elections last week, were a split decision on abortion. Now that the Supreme Court has taken that action with regard to Roe versus Wade, Indiana was the first state to put in a near total ban of abortion after SCOTUS's decision, and Kansas voted to not do that when it was on a referendum. So people are saying, well, Kansas is a Republican state. Look at this, everybody. This is a bad thing for Republicans. See, we told you murdering babies is the way to go. The Republicans are not going to go for this. But Kansas, the Jayhawkers have always been a problem. Have they not?
They have.
Can guarantee you, you go about 50 miles to the east, you go in Missouri, and a total ban of abortion passes 60-40 minimum.
And furthermore, they want to ignore the fact that Indiana is not in the Bible Belt. It's in the Midwest. It has been traditionally a Democratic state in many ways throughout history, but they have changed, and now they have voted to totally ban abortion. So, you know, they
Kansas
always...
Kansas has been a problem going back to the 1860s.
Yeah, well, the thing is, see, they will claim Kansas and report on Kansas, but the silence is deafening about Indiana.
This is still going to be something that would sail through most ballot initiatives in most red states, I can tell you that. Kansas is very much an outlier. Now, getting back to Peter Brimelow. By the way, Peter tuned in last week, Sam Dixon tunes in from time to time, and I always love it when the people that we feature actually tune into the programs, even when they're not listening, or rather when they're not on as a guest. Very much an honor to have the people that I look up to find some value in the work of our guest. And Peter was commenting about Brad Griffin's appearance specifically last week. Of course, he heard Jared and you as well, Keith. But we were talking about all of this, and I said, yeah, this is what I want to have you on to talk about, Peter, when you come back, is I want you. I mean, Peter is one of these – he's one of our lions. He's one of the guys that's been around for decades, and this is what we were asking of Jared Taylor last week. Are we getting too high? Are we being sober about all of this, or are things as good as they appear to be? And Jared took the optimistic approach. If you listened to his appearance in the third hour last week, things are good, and this is the recap I gave to Peter. So a recap of things we've been covering. Of course, he already knew all of this. He's covering it at VDare, too. We were just exchanging ideas and thoughts and brainstorming and had this text message exchange. But so the polls and anecdotal evidence, this is to get to cut to the chase. I want Peter's take when he comes back on the trends amongst GOP base. The polls and the anecdotal evidence, of course, suggest that the Trump voters have radicalized to the point that they are catching up to us. And we talked, for instance, about some of these polls. Polls that indicated that 87% of Trump voters are concerned about anti-white discrimination. 80% reject so-called white privilege. 64% say that their race and ethnicity is important to their identity, but 40% say that their race and ethnicity is very important to their identity. 40% of Trump voters, 40% of 60 million people. I know you tire of me repeating some of these stats, folks, but this is how we learn, through repetition. 73% believe in the Great Replacement. 30% say their state would be better off and that they personally would be better off if their state seceded. And it seems, Keith, and I shared this with Peter, that the Floyd riots, coupled with trans and critical race theory propaganda, has flipped a switch. The Texas GOP, we covered this on this program a couple of months ago at its state convention in June in Houston, declared that Biden is an illegitimate president. You were talking about the vote. Well, here's the biggest Republican state in the union declaring at their state GOP convention that this is an illegitimate presidency. They voted for a platform that included repealing the 1965 Civil Rights Act and called for a referendum to let Texans vote on secession.
65 Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, see, so yeah, the 65 Voting Rights Civil Rights Act. And a referendum to let Texans vote on secession. So this is the stuff that's going on. And the Great Replacement and secession are becoming mainstream ideas. And I am excited to hear what people think, where people think this will go over the course of the next decade.
Well, see, the fact that the left is still calling the Great Replacement radical. When did the truth become radical? The proof is in the pudding. The proof is there in population statistics. Compare 1960 to today. There's obviously a replacement going on. We also know that it is a government choice not to enforce our immigration laws. We have all the laws on the book that are necessary to stem this replacement, but the elite, the small group of elites that seem to run everything and have all the money, don't want it enforced, so it isn't enforced. The people are awakening to what's going on. They are awakening to the fact that their interests are not being served by the people they vote for, and they're flushing rhinos out of the Republican Party and replacing them with people like Blake Masters.
Here's the thing, Keith. People ask, why, if we have 60% of 60 million on this and 40% of 60 million on this and 73% of 60 million on this, why haven't we done something yet? Here's the reason why. Because all revolutions are top down. The minute we get a Viktor Orban here that will organize these people is the minute the light goes out on the left. And that day could come, and I don't give a damn about democracy. I don't like democracy. I'd rather have a different form of government. Maybe some of the things they say about me is true, but if this is a democracy, I don't want anything of it. If we're living under a democracy, I don't want anything of it. And but the minute you have a leader with the stones to do and say what Viktor Orban has done and said, is I think the day that all of these people begin to rise up and do something about the situation. And, well, history has just told us time and time again, we've been taught that this thing is cyclical. And all of this could end very quickly. I think it is a very tenuous hold that our overlords have on us right now.
Well, what we have is a dollar democracy. People don't vote, but money but talks and BS walks. In America, the people, the small group of elites, that have a lot of money and a lot of political influence and have the money to influence politicians have been running the show, but this is slowly changing now. It's, in fact, it's basically cresting. And if there is not massive fraud at the ballot box in the next presidential election, I guarantee the Democrats will not win that thing. And if they do win it, then you can chalk it up to electoral fraud.
Well, sometimes they say change happens very slowly and then all at once. A lot of the things we're talking about and celebrating here, a lot of the stats I just read, none of that was going on even 5 years ago. None of it. None of it pre-Trump.
Basically, Trump threw a stink bomb into the party.
Whether on purpose or inadvertently, a lot of the credit can go to Trump on this. And I know he was a disappointment in a lot of ways, and we've talked about all that.
Trump was great. President Trump, not so much.
Except for the fact that we're here because of him, and that's incontrovertible, I think. And sometimes a time for a movement just comes, and I think we may be on the cusp of that. We'll be right back. We're going to go to Selma next. What was I doing down there? What did I see? We'll talk about it.